Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
Well, Brad, this week you added something to our show notes that I had never seen before. So in our ongoing saga of talking about Rise of the Resistance and boarding groups...
In our
groups,
ongoing saga of never being able to get beyond Rise of the Resistance...
And boarding groups and everything, like the I guess the huge pain it's become to get in a boarding group, because as the time goes on, like, they just continue to be gone in less than a minute. And it's kind of a bummer, just like how much of a pain it is to get in one. But this website, thrilldata.com, has all of these like beautiful graphs, basically graphing out all this data about when the boarding groups get called, when they stop assigning them, how fast the processing goes, what group is, you know, called when, like all of these, all this awesome data that they're just collecting. Like, I love this. This is really cool.
Yeah. And so apparently the site isn't just doing this for Rise of the Resistance, because you can click around and get, you know, plenty of other attractions, but Rise is what drew me to it. I do not remember where I did not, like, someone pointed this out and I visited it and said, oh man, I love this kind of data. But essentially what this data shows is they really need to move back to a 7 o'clock opening.
Yeah.
For Hollywood Studios, because looking at it, when Hollywood Studios was open at 7, they were running out of the backup groups up until like the very last day. Like, well, and here and there were days where the backups closed pretty quickly after opening, but there were plenty of times where there were backup groups closing at 8, or I mean, sorry, at 8, at 8:30. You know, there were some days where it didn't close till like 9:30, 9:45, something like that. And you look at it, and as soon as it jumps to 8, pretty much, you know, there are a handful of times where the backup groups are open, still available for like 30 or 40 minutes. But there are a bunch of days where it's like the window opened, the guarantee closed, the backup closed, all exactly at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just stacked on top of each other.
And I think it's an inverse relationship between, as time goes on, Disney is kind of hedging a lot more with assigning boarding groups, and so the amount of boarding groups that get assigned is going down. And also, with this 8 a.m. opening, a lot more people are there getting boarding groups, so there's more people trying to get fewer boarding groups. And so I think these two data points are fighting against each other and making it almost impossible to ride this thing.
Well, and also, so the other graph that's really interesting to me is, I feel like, you know, when we talked about this the other day, and again, I'm still trying to get away from, and I fully recognize I am the one who put Rise News on the show notes. So this is all on me. I keep trying to get away from this, but like, I felt like we were saying that overall, it seemed like things were getting better. The graph that shows the group processing, like the max group available and the groups that got processed, does not show that, right? Like, it makes it look like this is still a total guess from day to day.
Yeah. Well,
how many groups are going to get called?
The thing is, like, so you look at the beginning of the graph and it's clear that like max groups is way more than groups processed. And then it evens out. And then it goes back to, you know, max groups is way more than groups processed and never really recovers again. Like, obviously it varies, but for the most part, it's still like the max groups and groups processed is not equal. And at this point, like, this thing opened on December 6th. we should be at a point where we know how the operations are. It's almost March. Like, there shouldn't be this big... I understand, like, stuff happens, and this is a very complex attraction. I get that. But we should be at a point here in the end of February where we are way more confident and aware of how this attraction is going to run than we were at, you know, the end of December.
Yeah, but still, okay, so we're recording February 27th. Hollywood Studios has closed for the evening, and according to the graphs, the, you know, looking at the trends, they should have gotten to 122 groups today. They made it through 68.
Right.
And are showing, you know, that it was delayed for over 25% of the day. Like, the reason why this stuff isn't together yet is because this ride still doesn't work. You know, I saw a tweet from Dub2Dub Theme Parks just shortly before we started recording, and he's like, you know, initially I was saying that Disney shouldn't split the opening of Galaxy's Edge, and now I just feel like they should open each attraction when it was ready, which for Smuggler's Run was when it opened, and for Rise of the Resistance is not yet.
I feel like Rise would probably be ready by now if they still had 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to work on it. Opening it in early December, all that did was limit the amount of time they have to fix it. They basically opened something that they weren't ready to open, and now they have almost no time to maintain it. This isn't like cleaning the floor and making sure, you know, like some animatronic figures are working. This is like fundamental stuff, and they don't have the time to work on it, because you would think, and I obviously have no idea how Imagineering works, but what I imagine would happen is before Rise opened, they would tweak stuff, move stuff around, commit a new version of the code, run the attraction once or twice, see how it ran, go back, tweak some more stuff, commit a new version of the code, run the attraction again once or twice. But now they have to, at night, work like crazy, and then during the day, they're made to run it over and over and over again. And like, there's just no room in it between runnings of the attraction, you know, full of people, for them to make changes. And if it wasn't open, they would have all day, every day, to sit in there and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it and tweak it and run it and run it and run it and run it and make it better. And so one half of me is very happy that they opened it when they did, because I got to ride it, and I'm very lucky that my ride.
And you actually got to be one of the few people who experienced a just normal ride through.
I had a flawless ride through of this thing, and I had no idea how fortunate I was back when, you know, back in December when I did ride through it. But now, like, I would have been, you know, kissing every cast member there. Like, God, I'm so happy this worked out. Because, yeah, I mean, it is clear that this thing was absolutely not ready to open. And but the biggest bummer is, like, so had they not opened it at the beginning of December, maybe it would have been ready by January. But because they opened it and they have such little, like, quote, free time to work on this, they may have taken what would have been an extra month of work and stretched it out to an extra year of work to get this thing up to its maximum capacity and reliability.
Well, here's my issue. I'm not saying that it's not possible. Please don't misconstrue this, but I am starting to wonder, is the issue that still exists within this attraction so big that it's not going to be fixable without shutting the attraction down for some period. Because that's the other issue is not just, like you said, constantly being able to tweak and try and tweak and try and tweak and try. But you can't just say, okay, well, this part doesn't work. Rip it out. We're going to put something new. You know, we're going to try something totally different. You can't do that anymore because you've got, what, 12 hours? Not even that, right? Because the park closed. Well, yeah. Let's actually say closer to like 10 hours because you've got to, you know, get everything 9 hours, right? Because it's got to close. So park closes at 8, but you don't actually get the attraction cleared till 9. And then you probably have to have the attraction ready to go at like 6 or 7 the next morning, you know, start getting, because then you have to start doing the morning tests,
right,
to make sure that everything's ready to run for the next day.
Well, and yeah, like if you've got, for some reason, you've got people in line and like they don't get onto the attraction, let's say, until 8:15. You know, they've been in the queue, they're letting them on, they get on the attraction at 8:15. They're not done until 8:40. And then they've got to get out. They've got to get everything shut down. They can't, you know, they've got to get everything reset. They've got to get all the ride vehicles back, reset everything. So, yeah, like 9 to 6, probably they have to work on it. And these poor people who are having to come in and work all night on this thing. And it's I would assume it's grueling because of how high profile this attraction is. Yeah, I can't imagine how tough that is for them.
Yeah. And again, at the end of the day, it was basically, I looked at this and said, number one, this is really cool data. I love having all these different graphs to see all this stuff. But number two, these graphs really highlighted for me, this attraction is nowhere near, like I felt like this attraction was getting better overall, right? Like maybe it was still stumbling here and there, but it was getting better. That is not what this data seems to indicate to me. This attraction is still having a lot of trouble. And honestly, this is the sort of thing. And I don't even know if I'd say that. Like if you have a Disney trip planned, you're going to go, right? But there was some part of me that wanted to see if I could somehow finagle Nancy into saying, hey, you know, is there some way you could see going for like a day or 2 day? With this attraction being the way that it is, there's no way I would do that.
Yeah, you almost need a week to build in the buffer to say, we're going to go to Hollywood Studios every single morning and try to get in a boarding group. And if we don't make it,
I'm just going to wait. And that's honestly where I'm at this point. I'm like, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to wait until it's fixed, until boarding groups aren't, like, until it's just something that you can go and do.
Well, and like me telling you, you know, once Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway opens, we need to talk. Because, like, I think it would be really fun for me and you to go and experience Runaway Railway and also do Rise of the Resistance. But at this point, like, Runaway Railway opens soon, like within a week.
Yeah, and yeah. And this at Ride is what? At this point, it feels like months away from being, and
it's like, if you and I are going to go to make a special trip for one Runaway Railway, maybe we should wait until July or August.
Exactly. So I don't know. It really concerns me because all of my friends and stuff know that I'm a Disney fan, and I stake my Disney fanaticism in many ways on the quality that Disney brings to the table. And I'm not doubting the quality of this attraction when it works. But I am saying that, you know, it's a little bit harder for me to say, man, Disney is top quality all the way, except that you might not get to ride this attraction because, you know, maybe they can only get because it literally just can't run.
And they say that
it's available, but I can't really in good conscience tell you this is something you could get to do.
The only thing I can hope that happened from this launch, and especially with Bob Chapek being promoted to CEO of Disney, is that someone high up realizes that this was not worth it. this opening Rise of the Resistance on schedule was not worth it, and that it should have been left to
push
bake a little longer. Because I think, and honestly, like, as happy as I am that I got to write it, had they said, you know, this is going to open in February, I wouldn't have been that bummed out. You know, it would have been much more of a bummer if they said this was going to open December 7th, you know, the day after I left, than if right. they said this opens in February. February 1st, this attraction will be open. Like, okay, you know, that's great. I'm glad it's going to work correctly, you know. And so I only hope that that someone high up, be that Bob Chapek or whoever is under him, or Bob Iger, you know, like whoever at Disney sees like this was not worth it. And from the rumblings that like we've heard, everyone knew it wasn't ready. And this was just we need this to open at this time. It's going to open at this time. And so it would have been much better, I think, to push this. And to have this thing opens and it runs at 80% capacity instead of this thing opens and it runs at 40% capacity. Because it's a bummer. And, like, this should be their crown jewel. Because it is worth that. It is worthy of that name. It is worthy of being, this is the reason you come to Walt Disney World. Like, you are going to come on a 4-day trip to ride Rise of the Resistance, and you're going to go see the Magic Kingdom, and you're going to go see Epcot, and you're going to go see Animal Kingdom too. But Rise of the Resistance is the reason you came. And I think it's worth that. And I think, honestly, I think Galaxy's Edge is worth that. I know it's just a land inside of a park, but I think Galaxy's Edge is a place that you can spend a day. Because if you are not the kind of person who just wants to come to a theme park and be thrilled, I think that you could easily spend a day, if in this world that I'm weaving, Rise of the Resistance and Smuggler's Run both run at 100% capacity. I was about to
say, right now you could spend a day, because it could be right. a day waiting to get on Rise of the Resistance.
Right. But I honestly think, like, just with the world building and everything, I think Galaxy's Edge is a place you could spend a day and be totally entertained. Because besides the two attractions that are there, the different things that happen in different parts of the day, the, you know, at nighttime, things change. I don't know. I really feel like Galaxy's Edge is something that could really be this, like, its own park, you know. And it's not big enough to be its own park, but it kind of is its own thing within Hollywood Studios. And it's a bummer that Rise of the Resistance, being as unreliable as it is, really does detract from what is, like, this amazing land that's built. Like, I keep, every time I think about the trip that we had in early December, the thing that I keep on going back to is waiting in line for Smuggler's Run and Rey and Chewbacca just emerging from the Millennium Falcon and, like, maintaining it. They're cleaning the landing gear, they're working on the landing gear, they just come out and maintain the Millennium Falcon and walk away. And these are characters from, like, some of the most popular movies ever in the world, and they're walking, like, the fact that Chewbacca is just walking around working, like, it's not like come meet Chewbacca, it's like Chewbacca is there living his life.
You just happen to be in the same place as right. Chewbacca, right?
Yes, he's maintaining his ship. And, like, just that kind of stuff, like the stormtroopers that walk around and harass you, the Rey walks through the crowd and talks to people and tries to recruit people to the, you know, to the resistance. All of that is so incredible that you really could spend a whole day there and have fun and be entertained and be engrossed in that land. But Rise of the Resistance not working, you know, full capacity and being in this boarding group system for who knows how long, where it's that much more limited, does really detract from that.
Yep. Well, hopefully we are making mountains out of molehills. I don't really think that's the case, because I think molehill status disappeared about 3 or 4 weeks ago. But hopefully this will be sorted out soon, and then we can stop talking about it, because Rise of the Resistance can just be yet another attraction at Walt Disney World. Then we can start talking about how unreliable Runaway Railway is.
All right, Brad, enough about Rise of the Resistance. Let's talk about important things, like how small these dumb popcorn buckets that Disney's selling is. They're too small. They don't hold even close to enough popcorn. I need so much more popcorn than these little popcorn buckets can hold, and I'm mad about it.
Is that going to be your campaign platform? The popcorn buckets are too dang small?
Yes.
So we should specify that you're talking about the new extremely cool looking monorail popcorn bucket at Tokyo Disney Resort.
Yes. Yes. These are monorail. They're the special monorails with the Mickey windows that look like a van to me. But yes, it's a new monorail popcorn bucket, and it looks great. I love it. I would get it. But like, what I need when I pay whatever these popcorn buckets cost, whatever exorbitant amount of money is charged for popcorn. I understand popcorn is a thing that you just charge a lot of money for, even though it's basically free. I get it. I understand. But give me some sort of voucher, because, okay, so let me preface this by saying that popcorn is my favorite food. If you had to ask me to pick one favorite food, it's popcorn. I love popcorn. Popcorn is the best. I need some kind of voucher that's like, you can just have as much popcorn as you want. You buy this popcorn bucket for $30, you bring it back, and you just get free refills forever. Because I can tell you that no human being could ever consume $30 worth of popcorn. So like, even if someone came back 20 times and refilled this popcorn bucket, you would still come out ahead, Disney. I don't know if you understand how cheap corn is. It's very cheap.
And how cheap it is for them, considering how much of it they're buying?
It's like extremely cheap, Disney. You could give this corn away for free, and it would not hurt you. It would affect your bottom line, obviously, because you charge a 1,000% markup on it right now, which I can't blame you, but popcorn is extremely cheap, and give me unlimited popcorn if I buy your $30 popcorn bucket. That's all I'm saying. They're very small.
But now, in their defense, it's not just corn, right? Because these are the Tokyo Disney popcorn buckets, and they are all flavored. So you've got like the honey popcorn, the black pepper popcorn, the curry popcorn, the garlic shrimp popcorn, the strawberry popcorn.
I got you. Okay.
So there you go. I mean, suddenly this corn is super expensive.
Hey, Disney, I don't know if you know this, but these popcorn chemicals you're buying to flavor your popcorn are extremely cheap. And your corn is also extremely cheap. And the butter flavor is also extremely cheap. And salt is a rock, and it is also extremely cheap.
So I don't know. Did you say is this bucket going to be 30? Is that what you said?
I have no idea. I just, like, most of them are between $20 and $30, so I assume.
Because I haven't seen pricing for this one. I've seen quite a few people tweeting about it, but most of them are in Japanese, and I don't speak Japanese, and I'm not going to go and Google Translate a whole bunch of tweets right now to try to figure out the price. But I do see, like, last year, it looks like their popcorn buckets were running anywhere from, like, $15 to $26, $27,
mm-hmm.
right, U.S. But at the same time, you could also get a dill of popcorn for $3.
Yeah.
So they are fully aware of how much popcorn. Exactly. Exactly. They're fully aware of how much popcorn costs. And that's why they're charging $3 for the dill of popcorn. They're just charging a lot more money for the bucket. So
you could
buy 10 boxes of popcorn for your $30. You're not going to eat $10 of popcorn, Jeremy.
Oh, buddy, you don't know me.
If you do, you're going to regret.
Oh, Brad, yes, I have eaten so much popcorn that I've regretted it probably a million times in my entire life, and I would gladly do it. I do love popcorn a lot.
But what's interesting to me is I guess the buckets are bigger because real-time follow-up, TDR Explorer has a really nice in-depth guide on...
He is the best.
Isn't he, though?
He was at Disney when I was there. He was at Walt Disney World when I was at Walt Disney World. And I could not find him, and it was very sad. Because I just wanted to give him a hug and be like, I love your website so much.
You do so well at all this stuff. But yeah, he has this big in-depth popcorn thing. And, you know, popcorn, $3 a box. But you could refill your bucket for $4 per refill. So I'm assuming the buckets are bigger than the boxes, but at the same time, I'm looking at this popcorn bucket, and as you said, I'm not sold that this popcorn bucket would be bigger than a box. The problem is we need a banana for scale.
Yeah.
we have no banana for scale.
Yeah, you get these, you know, volumetrically, maybe it's a little bigger, but I don't know, man. I think buying the popcorn bucket should include, you know, 10 free refills or something.
Don't they
some vouchers? Well,
okay, so I don't know if they do like free refills, but don't they do like discounted refills at Walt Disney World if you have popcorn buckets?
Yeah, they do.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But a certain number of them should be free is all I'm saying. Look, man, I want to get as much popcorn as I possibly can.
I just want, you know what? I would be more happy to pay the price for popcorn if stateside we could get all of these flavors, because that black pepper popcorn is so good. I still remember that black pepper popcorn and the honey popcorn. Those were the two that just like really stood out to me.
I would be more than happy to be drowning in popcorn, much like the people almost did on the Jungle Cruise today when one of the Jungle Cruise boats sank.
That's water, buddy. That's not popcorn.
Oh, man.
You got too much popcorn on the mind. But yes, if you can sink, if you can drown in 4 feet of water, yes, some people almost drowned on the Jungle Cruise. Are you now writing for some of these clickbaity websites
Breaking.
Or something?
Breaking. Okay. But let me say, I can't be the only person. And I'm not afraid to admit that I didn't know the Jungle Cruise boats floated. I assumed that, okay, and this is not safe for magic, so close your ears if you don't want like spoilers and stuff. There's a track on the floor of the Jungle Cruise. Like, there's a track. And I assumed that the boats were on like a rigid pole setup. And so I had no idea until today that those boats float in the water. I have always assumed that they are propped up on solid poles and that the like tilting and stuff is all just done by, you know, mechanics.
See, all I ever had to do was get on one of those boats to know that it floats. Like embarking,
so is it like
and
a
just...
chain? Is it like a like something that's slack is pulling them
it
along
has
that
to be.
Track?
It has to be.
Huh.
Because the boat Wild. The boat is definitely responsible for its own keeping itself above the water.
That's
as was proven
yeah.
today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So one of the boats took on water for whatever reason. It obviously wasn't that big of a deal because they, you know, got everybody out and the attraction reopened, you know, very quickly. But
and no one was hurt.
Yeah, nobody was hurt. But man, like what a wild, I would almost want that to happen because it's never happened before. Like after I you know, escaped the boat and was not hurt. I feel like I would feel pretty cool that had happened to me.
Yeah. So laughingplace.com managed to get a statement from Disney on this. Disney said a boat took on some water. Reedy Creek Fire Department responded immediately to this event. Everyone got out of the boat safely. We worked with guests individually so that they could enjoy the rest of their day in the park. Mm-hmm. The attraction has reopened. There's how much information we have about what happened.
A boat took on some water. This boat sank, Disney. I'm so sorry, but it did not take on some water. It did take on all of the water and did sink. We worked with guests individually. We gave them all free tickets and $50 food vouchers or whatever.
Okay, so
they
that's
do.
So that's the way you read that too, right?
Yes, yes.
We gave people a lot of stuff to sign this piece of paper that said that this would be the last we'd have to talk about it.
I'll shut up about this, and yeah, yes.
Unfortunately, they still had all the paperwork drawn up from the gondolas, and you know, they've had a few events that have made sure they had everything on hand and
right,
available.
Right.
Yeah.
Did reopen. Like they brought in another boat, towed the one into the maintenance area, brought out one of the other ones. And like, it's not like this was a huge deal. You know, it's a boat. And like, as long as you can get it out of the way, you just bring another one in and everything's fine. As long as nobody got hurt, this isn't a big deal. I just think it's like pretty hilarious that one of these Jungle Cruise boats sank.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's not something that you would expect to happen. But I think personally what I liked about this is so the boat sank, nobody was hurt, so I don't have to feel bad about it, right?
Right.
Which is good, because now I can, you know, scroll down my Twitter timeline and see everybody making fun of the Jungle Cruise boat sinking. You know, like the Flex Seal, the official Twitter account for Flex Seal, tweeted, Jungle Cruise should consider using Flex Paste in the future.
That's a lot of damage.
Yeah.
What I really want to know is, like, how did this happen? Clearly it sprung a leak somewhere, but...
Well...
How did it spring a leak?
Okay, it didn't have to spring a leak because, again, it's a boat that floats, right? And while I would assume that skippers are trained on how to load, if it wasn't loaded properly, I think it's possible that, you know, you get a little bit too much on one side or the other side, and next thing you know, kaploosh, everybody's getting a free bath.
You think they made a turn and they had a few too many pounds on one side and it dipped down and took on water?
I mean, that's like, I can't say for sure, but yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, and it's also possible that there's a maintenance issue, but what seems weird to me is if it was a maintenance issue, like it either had to be a catastrophic failure of some sort, or I feel like you could complete one trip and be like, oh, there's a little bit of water in here. Hey, guys, we need to take this boat out of service ASAP.
This boat's floating a little low.
Right, exactly.
Let's take this guy out. Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so by the way, I will say that this isn't the first time it happened. I did see somebody talking about it happening back in 2004 as well.
Hmm.
So I don't know that it was the exact... Clearly, don't know that it was the exact same event, but... Not the first time that a Jungle Cruise boat has sunk, but if you were if you were partial to the Bumacondi Bertha, you might be waiting a couple of days for that one to get back in service.
And would you go on it?
Oh, absolutely. It's okay. So this is kind of, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, they had that, there was like a helicopter crash or something in Hawaii. And somebody said something about, well, they definitely wouldn't do one of those. And I'm like, that's the perfect time to do it. Because if there was a time when something's not going to happen, there's the time right there. If I'm going to ride that boat, or heck, any of the Jungle Cruise boats, now's the time to ride them, because I guarantee you those suckers have been checked stem to stern.
That boat would hold 1,000 pounds on one side and 0 pounds on the other side and not capsize. Like, that is going to be the safest boat in the Jungle Cruise fleet for sure.
Yeah, so I have no issue with riding that boat. And again, nobody got hurt. We got some really fun Twitter jokes. You know, if you liked the cruise, my name was Dan. I was your skipper. If you didn't like the cruise, my name was Captain Nemo, and this has been 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Well, I think that'll do it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. You can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And until then, have a magical day.